Suns fans, you know what time it is in the PHX.
Empire of the Suns.
Phoenix Suns.
The Empire of the Suns podcast is brought to you by Sonic. Sonic.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Colin Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmer. Man, what's up, dude?
Hi, we get a full series. It's like our pleading at the end of our last episode that we hope we get to watch a full playoff series came to fruition. Thanks, powers of the basketball universe.
It was not a promising beginning. I can't remember. I'm checking right now. Did we podcast before the Clippers games or after?
It was after. It was before. Oh, man. Yeah, our memories are terrible.
It was the day of the Kings game is when we podcasted.
Yeah.
We were not feeling good about this team at all. And as the tale of the season has been, who knows what team they're going to be on any given day. They got the really good version of themselves in Minnesota for the last game of the year. And then in Sacramento, it wasn't the best effort, but Beal in particular really fired them up and got them going. They scratched out a close win, and then more importantly, the Lakers absolutely beat up on the Pelicans and then beat them again in the play-in. So here we are, round one. The Suns draw their most favorable matchup possible. We did a podcast a couple of episodes ago ranking our matchups for this team, and I believe I had Minnesota 3, if I remember correctly.
I was going to say I should have gone back before this.
So still a top three most difficult matchup for me personally, but I thought there was a gap between the Thunder and the Nuggets and then this team. And I think a lot of people, rightfully so, are coming into this series fairly optimistic. What is your balance? And the theme of our preview here episode is going to be, what is your balance between taking away everything that went well in the three matchups, which was a whole lot, and the state of the team as it is?
I think the three matchups are important. One, you have the confidence factor. Two, you have basically a shell of an idea. So you're kind of, you have that advantage of like, you have a game plan somewhat in place. Now you can guess what the Timberwolves are going to do to counter that, and they have all the evidence like we talked about it. You went over it and you're going over it more in your preview series about how like the Suns have stopped Anthony Edwards, why they've just matched up well even though it doesn't seem like they should. I think that's a good position to be in going into any series where you're like, okay, they have to make the right counter punches, the right corrections already off the bat. And yeah, maybe that loses you game one. That's fine, but you're already evolved into like what the problems were. I think if they face the Clippers, Nuggets probably, like those are, the Clippers especially is just more complicated because those games are so different. But the T-Wolves, like it was the same thing three times and nothing changed. So I guess I could ask you if the Suns did anything super different. Obviously the T-Wolves, whether they had Cat or not matters. But to me, I think it's good that like they haven't solved you yet. And in a regular season, regardless of what the importance is, regardless of your roster situation at that time, I just think like until the T-Wolves can figure it out, the Suns have the advantage.
The determining factor of the series may very well be if Anthony Edwards has the playmaking juice that he's going to need for this series, because there's, I couldn't figure out the way to write this, so I just didn't, but that's what the podcast is for. Those three regular season matchups, they just showed him the look.
Yeah.
They gave him the look. And there is a lot of like, ooh, we're going to hide stuff for the playoffs. The Suns aren't in a position to hide stuff for the playoffs. So Vogel is going to tweak a lot of stuff, and he's not going to run the same thing out there. But with that said, Ant said a bunch after the game on Sunday and said a bunch today about they're double, triple teaming me. The key thing that he said that I included in the story was that he needs to get off the ball a beat sooner, which was great because when I was watching all of the examples for him, I was like, he's just taking an extra dribble and he needs to just trust the pass once he gets inside the 3-point line instead of like trying to get to the basket and then seeing if the pass is there. And the Suns have a bunch of guys on their team that have really good hands. We talked about that randomly with about Eric Gordon a couple months ago. Nurk's got great hands. KD's got great hands. Beal does as well. So those guys, Royce, have just been swiping and getting the ball from him a whole lot. He did not get those foul calls in those three games. He was very insistent that he should have been. And I'm curious to see if that changes. It probably won't in the playoffs, but then again, it could be just officiated differently than those games were. The last two were post, like silent ref change, the whatever you want to call it, when free throws were kind of all over the place. Way down, there was a game with Boston and Milwaukee, I think, a week or two ago that had two total free throws in it, which was insane. So I'm curious to see how Ant adjusts, because I've been reading other opinions on it, and I think that I am higher on the Wolves supporting cast, like everyone besides Ant. I'm higher on everyone besides Ant than I think a lot of people are, and that's part of my confidence in picking against Phoenix. We'll go over it at the end, but I'm not picking Phoenix to win this series, mainly due to their inconsistencies.
That's like fair,
if they were... If they would have gone 5-5 in the last 10 games, but they would have like been just like level for the most part, I would have felt much safer about picking them than I do now, because it was just all over the place. Like I thought Tuesday, Wednesday, like they were basically like quitting on the season, it looked like. And then they come out Friday and Sunday and it does not look that way at all. So with all of that said, I trust that their 3-point shooters are going to hit shots. Minnesota's are. They've got Nickeil Alexander-Walker, pretty good 3-point shooter. Nas has been a great 3-point shooter this year. Him, Mike Conley, and Towns are their three highest volume guys outside of Ant, and they're all above 40%. Kyle Anderson is the only real non-shooter, and then besides Gobert. And then Jaden McDaniels has been around 33% this year after he was at 39. So he's the only McDaniels is the only guy that shoots them and hasn't been shooting them that great. I think those guys will knock down more shots. I think Ant will find the pass a little bit better. And then I think that Towns specifically is going to be someone who should be set up by this. And like, he's not the number one guy. And in fact, the entire defense is basically designed on stopping him. And Cat's going to have a lot of room to run. I included the clips in the preview of the first game where he had a lot of driving lanes and he was taking them. That's going to be a big factor in the series I wrote about, him and Nas getting downhill, because the Suns just don't really have defenders built for that. Like, as it turns out, Eubanks is probably the best guy built to defend them in that situation. That's too small. Nurk is probably a step too slow. Eubanks has the mix of like strength and speed there, but there's going to be nights where one of the target Minnesota was looking for, they were trying to get book switched on Nas a lot, and Nas wasn't really able to take advantage of it, but I think he's going to do a better job. So that's part of the balance of what I wrote about, and it came out very like, oh, this is looking really good for the Suns, but it did in the regular season, and I just expect Minnesota to handle it a lot better than they did based on how solid they've been. But then again, maybe they are just, the Suns are just a bad matchup for them. Like, you have that theory about the Nuggets with how the Nuggets have looked against the Suns, where it's like maybe they just can't figure out the Suns this year. And like, a lot of people believe that, and I understand why, and we'll get into more here in a second about the reasons why from Phoenix's perspective it's worked, besides the fact that Ant shot 31%, had 11 assists and 10 turnovers in these three games, and he only had 5 1 pass assists, where if Book, to compare the two players, if Book had that coverage, he would have like 12 assists a game pretty much, because of like the swing to the wide corner, the lob to his center, like he would have feasted on that. But Ant's only 22, he's learning.
My big thing about him is like, can you agree they pretty much kind of played this shell coverage where, so they had like basically everyone's kind of in the paint, like a step out of the paint when he was driving or he had the ball in his hands.
It's,
and they're swiping.
It's almost box and one-y, a little bit. It's a little bit box and one-y.
But here's the thing that's the most confusing part about trying to guess on this is, in theory, Frank Vogel will send different things at him.
Yes.
And that's being like, send all out blitzes, like things that they've done to Devin Booker, especially. Like, can the Suns do that to Ant? Well, one, will they do that to Ant if he starts picking them apart? Because he's, like you said, if he makes the right pass before he drives into trouble to takes the extra dribble and gets into trouble. If he starts doing that, then they can be like, okay, are we blitzing you really hard, making you just get rid of it like beyond the three-point line? That's great. And then you're dealing with, can the Timberwolves make shots? But also then you're wondering, okay, the Suns have not been consistent with like defensive coverages enough to make you believe that like Frank Vogel's strengths as a coach of changing things in game, changing things in between game, can they execute if you start to switch up coverages on them? I have no idea. And that's where it gets really scary for you. If you're guessing like, oh, the Suns will do what they did in the regular season, the T-Wolves will do what they did. I don't think that'll happen through whatever, however long the series goes, if it's only four games even. So that's my concern. If you're looking at the Suns, it's like they haven't shown that they can switch up coverages. They're not good enough of a defensive team to do that personnel wise, but also just following instructions wise. And that's where you worry. Like, I think it was this past Sunday game where you look at the shot chart for Minnesota and they just had like six or seven wide open left wing threes that were just missed. And it's like that changes that game completely if they just knock down even a couple. So to me, it's a little sketchy on picking the Suns because of that. But I will say, after questioning all of them, there's a reason the Suns went and got three perimeter players, and that's because like if the Suns shut down Ant, yes, they might get open shots, but they don't have another perimeter guy to do a lot of damage. Like, I wanted to ask you, actually, Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert pick and rolls, like, they have obviously played a lot of games together and stuff. Mike Conley's an awesome player, one of the smartest, most underrated players in the game, whatever. But like, do you think that can be like kind of enough offense to get you through if Ant's struggling and they're locking him up?
I think it's more on that part of their offense opening up Nas and Cat.
Yeah.
Because I think Nas and Cat are the two keys to the series for them. And by extent, by an extension, that makes Conley, because someone needs to get them the ball, someone needs to get the sets going in a certain motion. Like,
yeah.
I went back and watched all of Ant's baskets against the Suns this year. Only one of them was pretty much set up by someone. It was just all self-creation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Conley can also step up as well. And it's like, I don't know Minnesota's offense well enough to say, like, do they have stuff off the ball where Ant's running around a couple of screens and getting into a one dribble pull-up? But that's not really Ant's game either, because he's been an okay mid-range shooter, slightly below average this year. He's been an okay three-point shooter this year, slightly below average. Look, if you give him jumpers, there's a good chance he'll just score 40, like, and get into rhythm just off jumpers. But he wants to get to the rim. And to what you were saying about adjustments, Vogel talked about that yesterday. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. Couldn't tell how much of a subtweet it was necessarily, but it was essentially a, like, this is adjustment time, and there are certain things you want to try in the regular season. As much as I enjoy the regular season, it's 82 games, and it's a game every other day against different teams, and you just... He expressed a restriction that he feels in terms of changing stuff in the regular season.
Yeah.
That's what he was kind of expressing. And that's where we all talked about with Monty a lot, because I saw a tweet. I can't remember who it was. And this is going to blow a lot of people's minds when they realize they're this person. But it's like, why does every NBA fan base criticize their coaches for adjustments and then get really mad that this one bench player is not playing instead of the other bench player? It was like the Warrior spaces last night where they were all ranting about Trayce Jackson-Davis minutes. And it's like, you guys just got ran by the Kings.
Yeah.
Like, that's not really an issue right now. And to that point, we talk about adjustments with coaches all the time. So when it came up with Monty and was a criticism of Monty, I was like, okay, do we know his team is capable of that? Like, I think he understands to some extent that the adjustments are needed, but he also has to have the faith, and his team has to show the ability to do those adjustments. To your point on Minnesota's offense, I will swing it back around and I will go to the Suns' defense, where I'll say what I started with in both previews, which was like, this is why Minnesota is a bad matchup for them, is they have no one. KD can guard wings. He can guard wings. Now, all series, that's going to be a tough ask for him. Like, if he's guarding Kawhi Leonard an entire series, like, even if he's guarding like MPJ next round, if they advance, that would be tough. That would be a lot for him that he would be able to handle, but it would just, like, workload wise, you'd be slightly concerned about that. Maybe not someone like MPJ, but like maybe someone like Gordon, who's more active and like running into him everywhere and that kind of thing, which we saw.
That is a good question.
Series.
Like, which one of those guys is actually harder to guard?
Last year. But bigs, Jokic, Nurkic, to look at Denver again, like Nurk is at least physical with him, and Nurk is always physical with bigs. He's going to be physical with Gobert. You get that from him. For guards and smaller ball handlers, they don't really have a... This is where you could argue Royce starting, but we saw that.
Yeah. Like it,
and we've seen him come out, and he's a good, very good defender, in my opinion. But in terms of what we're talking about, like being the guy to guard and all series, that's not him. So you got Grayson and you got Brad. And in theory, someone like Ant, who in my opinion, out of like the non-unicorn region, so that's like the Wemby, Giannis, Kevin, those kinds of things, he's the most athletic guy in the league. Like where he's like a standard size for his position, he's like a 6'5 shooting guard, but yeah. His athleticism, speed, changing angles, there's a couple of little clips in there where it's him weaving through three guys. And that's the issue with what you're talking about is, let's play like kind of a drop on him and let him take 18 footers. It's like, no, because once he has the space, he's just going to zigzag around four guys and then dunk on your team.
Yeah.
Like he can just wind
it's
around.
It's a little more than Josh Okogie coming around the screen. Yes.
And he can see the passes now with a little bit more space now, whereas the plan the Suns have been doing, which has been excellent, has just been don't let him see anything, like contain him immediately. But Ann, in theory, is someone who should be really challenging for them. And I think that's where this series, defensively, a lot of this is going to rely on, I don't want to say which use of Nurkic they get, but getting a good, consistent outing out of Nurk every night.
Yeah.
Because if he's like a step off with his coverages or something like that, which to be clear, he hasn't been. I watched all three of these games back and he was great. He was great playing at the level. He was great getting back. He was great being physical with Gobert, all that kind of stuff. He was great. He has gotten into foul trouble twice in both of the games in April. Fourth foul with like 9 minutes left in the third, and then fifth foul in the other game with like a couple minutes left in the third as well. He has to stay on the floor. Has to.
Yeah.
And without him, I really worry about the consistency of the execution of the coverages with Eubanks or with whoever else. And again, I'm going to preface, Drew on the tape was pretty good in those three games. Like he did make a couple of mistakes and there were like three turnover runs where all three turnovers looked like they were actually his fault instead of the person that passed it. Like you get that stuff with him as we've seen all year, but they can't be in a position where Nurk is playing 22 minutes or 24. Like he's going to have to play 32, 34, and we'll see how he holds up over the course of the series because he hasn't been up there in minutes. I think he's going to be fine, but that's a big thing I'm thinking about. Defensively, David, our Australian correspondent, was replying to me on Twitter and basically said from his schematic viewing of the season, the coverage that they're doing with their shell on Ant is like what they've been the best at this year. He's seen the consistency there the most.
Yeah.
So that's where I wonder, like if Ant's finding the passes and they try to change it, that's another concern for me. Let's go offense now.
Okay.
For the Suns. Is it a Booker series or is it a Durant series? I think that's like the point we're at with these guys now. It's always a Booker series to some extent.
I think it's going to be a Booker or a Beal series.
Booker has shredded Gobert in these three games.
Yeah.
Shredded him. I think it was, I'm forgetting his name or forgetting how to pronounce it, but the athletic writer from Minnesota, he had in his story that three out of four of Gobert's worst plus minus totals of the year were against Phoenix.
Huh.
Plus minus a wonky individual stat, but not for someone like Rudy Gobert, where like his presence on the floor changes the game every possession.
That's a little of a trend. Yeah.
He's in there, but that's a little bit of a trend. And a lot of it is because Book is really comfortable like moving him around.
Yeah.
He's very comfortable moving him and their defense around. So I'm answering the question myself, but I think that's a good way to put it. It isn't even like a Booker or KD thing. I think it's a Booker or Beal thing, and it's going to have to be both of them, I think.
I mean, it's defensive matchups, like where they go. I mean, Edwards and McDaniels, pick one of them is going to be on KD, I think, and that's just simply...
The two of them will be on the two main guys, and they'll switch. Ant's been guarding KD a lot in these games, which doesn't surprise me totally, but I would expect McDaniels to get a fair share on KD as well.
What's interesting is like Ant before this year especially had like some like, oh, he's going to be good on defense games against Book. He's like who else is like a good defender on Devin Booker that we know of? He's had some good games. I guess Thybul was in there, but he's on the Trailblazers or something. But anyway, that's what's weird to me is like you can only put them one place, and I'm just going off this past month, and I looked at the splits, and Bradley Beal is shooting 60% basically this the month of April.
I had
50-something, 40-something from three.
I have the stat where I think it's his last 28 games of the year, he shot 52% from three.
Yeah. He is not... I mean, he's just found a rhythm without taking a lot of shots. We've talked about that before, but I just think he's kind of just found it, and teams are going to have to figure out how to deal with him. And that's what's, I think, on the table right now is we're at that point where teams are going to be like, oh, we know how to stop the other two, but this is where it gets super interesting for me. And I don't know if KD's had like a wear down effect. He's obviously deferred a lot more. I think he's trying to avoid turnovers too, but like we don't see the high post stuff as much lately. I don't think they should have it anyway. It seems forced. I think that's why the offense has looked better, is just Beal and that kind of thing. So I don't know who's going to guard him when you get down to the other guys. So we'll see on that, but they're entering at a good point, I think, with where their offense is, at least.
Yeah, so for me, Devin Booker should be first team All-NBA every year.
Mm-hmm.
He is not going to be first team All-NBA this year, and that is warranted. He has regressed this season. I'm shocked, flummoxed, baffled, befuddled. How much of it is because of the situation? I don't know. That's reading a lot into stuff that we aren't privy to, but I've talked about it on this podcast for 8 years now. He's going to improve every year. Something's going to be better. And I don't think anything about his game has been better this year. Maybe like the point guard floor general stuff, but then it became Brad. So it was like, I don't know really where to evaluate him. Defensively, it's been regression. Unfortunately, I think that's been the most noticeable part. He is coming off of the best postseason in franchise history. So what is the balance between getting that guy and getting the guy that they've gotten this year, which has still been one of the 10 to 15 best players in basketball? I'm curious to see, because look, if they get Book from last postseason or Book from the regular season 2 years ago when he was first team All-NBA, they will win this series. I'm pretty confident that they will win this series because he can just carry an entire team in this specific kind of matchup. I don't think that he's going to be able to reach those heights because whatever's been going on with this team, both inside, behind closed doors and out in the open, that's my answer, is that it's a cop-out answer, but I think that it's been affecting his game a little bit too much. And when I look at Durant, I wrote that column where I was like doing game, I'm going to be doing this again this year, but like game preview before the game, all that kind of stuff. My whole game preview for game six was like, this is like KD's first legacy moment, when his legacy, and what does his legacy mean? That was like a save us Kevin game in game six, and it didn't come together. Guess what? He had no room around him. Book was playing on a bad leg or whatever it was by then. We still don't know what that injury was, but over that postseason run, I don't think there were enough he's Kevin Durant games.
Yeah.
Now, the box scores, and when you see some of these games back, I think that game four against Denver is the one that I come to, because he had 36, 11, 6, 2, and 1, but he was 11 of 19 from the floor. In the two previous games and then in the next game, he shot 10 of 27, 12 of 31, and then 10 of 24. He has said for a while now that mid to high teens is where he wants his field goal attempts to be. For example, game two against the Clippers, which they won, he had 25, 6, and 5, which is like a pretty standard, maybe a below average Kevin Durant performance, but that's like the rhythm that you want to see from him. And I thought he was able to find it, but with that being said, when he tried to turn on like the I'm Kevin Durant thing, which wasn't what he was trying to do, I'm not trying to like act like I know what his thought process was, but he was taking a lot of shots. And when he was, it wasn't leading to success. And it's like, can he, if we're looking at the Suns are down 2-1, They're at home. It's game four, and they're down 7 at half, and Book's just getting swarmed. He can't get by Gobert. Beal is kind of stuck in his no man's land of what his role is. Threes aren't going down for the teammates. Nurk's missing bunnies. Like, everything's going wrong, but they're kind of sort of in the game. Can he just score 35 in that second half, and can they win? Because it's Kevin Durant. And we didn't see that too much last year, but this is like the highest standard that I myself choose to hold to a player like that too, because he's capable of it and he's done it a lot over the course of his career. And we didn't see too many of those moments. He's been more of the barometer for this team, honestly, more than anything else. But I'm wondering for those two guys specifically, because if you get all three guys at their best, Ant, Book, and Durant, Ant's the third best player in this series. But I think there's a really good chance that Ant is the best player in this series, ends up being the best performer in this series. Like, he performs the best out of the three of them. We'll see how right or wrong I am. I'm not predicting that by any chance, but I'm saying there's a real chance of it happening. I would not have said that a year ago. I would not have said that 2 years ago based on the way that KD and Book have performed. But this year has just been not weird, but just a little bit off. And it's been, you can tie it back to like their individual play, I think.
I'll go and say that if we're going to pick one reason to forget this regular season, like, they were just cruising, they can flip a switch, all that like guessing and nonsense that after you watch 82 games of this team, you don't believe. I think I will believe that Devin Booker can flip a switch individually and hit that gear again. Like, last postseason run is, I don't think, how, no matter how good you are, that's really hard to reach. Like, LeBron hits that maybe multiple times in his career, whatever. Luka can do that maybe. But I think he's going to be, you know, 29 points, 8 assists guy, play better defense with more effort guy. On the other hand, I don't know. I'm not trying to be hot takey, but like, Kevin Durant has a lot of miles on him this year alone. Just up there in age. And it, to me, from where and how much he had to carry this team when Book and Beal were hurt, especially front end of this season, I just don't know what to expect. Like, I'm not expecting that from him. Like, is that disrespectful? Is that, I don't mean it that way. I just think he's kind of been burnt out. And to the same point, Kevin.
Okay.
And the same point about Book, like, maybe he can turn it around and just turn it on and flip a switch. But I don't know if that's still there. Like, you talk about like the Kevin Durant games where he just takes over. How many do you have in the regular season? Maybe
like a dozen.
You think a dozen?
Close to a dozen.
The last.
Like, you think of the Chicago game.
Yeah. The last few months, though,
But again, how much is that by design?
Yeah.
Again, is that by design? How much of it is him taking the way the game is coming to him? How much of that is getting Brad comfortable?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
A lot of it comes back to continuity.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm writing now is that I believe Brad's going to have to look like Bradley bleepin' Beal for at least two of these games for the Suns to win the series. The good news is he's looked like Bradley for the Suns is that he's looked like
don't
Bradley
say the bad word.
Beal
yeah,
for okay. All five of these games, probably the last five games, averaging 27 a game or whatever it was. He certainly was in the last two games. So we'll see on them. I just think that the other thing is Grayson's been rock, just super consistent, like rock solid all year.
Oh yeah, he got an extension.
He got an extension.
Hey, news dump.
4 years, $70 million. That's something for us to get to in the offseason anyway. I wouldn't really like it's. They had to get it done. We expected them to get it done. They got it done. We'll talk about it more in the offseason. Royce is going to be Royce. He's going to be a really positive impact on the floor whenever he's out there. Is his shot going to go in? I don't know. It's going to be streaky, probably. Jay shot 13% from three in the New Orleans series before he shot 45% from three in the Dallas series. Like, that's just how those guys go sometimes, and that's how Royce is going to go, but you're going to get his positives anyway. But those two guys combined with Brad and Nurk, particularly Brad and Nurk are the two guys I'm focusing on writing because their roles have been shifted the most and they're still going to need to be pretty good in this series. And we weren't even sure if they were going to be playing in the series. It was like an if they're healthy thing all year. And those were the two guys we were talking about. They're both healthy. Okay. How do they perform? We'll see. One thing I'll toss out in terms of booking KD, if this is their series, Minnesota allows a lot of mid-range jumpers. They're cool with it. So those guys can get to their middies when they want to, at least with how Minnesota's designed their defense so far this year. And we'll see how much they're able to rely on that. We'll see how much Book gets trapped in this series. That's kind of like a wait and see sort of thing. Because with the way Brad is playing right now, I don't think trapping Book is a tremendous idea. And getting Gobert that far out of the key is probably not a tremendous idea, but they'll try some different stuff. We'll see what's going on there. What do you think? What are you picking?
I think I'm going to go Suns in seven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the T-Wolves yet. I will say if it was the Thunder, if it was the Nuggets, if it was the Clippers, I'd be like, I'm not picking the Suns.
The precedent here, if you're not familiar, is like a league-wide NBA fan. Cat in the playoffs turns into a horrible decision maker where he fouls the crap out of everyone and then looks aghast by the calls, and everyone watching is like, dude, you fouled him. Like, that's the most obvious foul I've ever seen.
We love your passion, but tone it down a little, yeah.
And just makes bad decisions and looks completely, like, out of sorts. Like the claw machine metaphor where someone just picked him up and dropped him on that floor all of a sudden. That's what it looks like for him in the playoffs and has for 2 years now. So this is a gigantic series for
legacy.
Legacy series for Cat. Gobert just eventually gets played off the floor. Teams eventually space it out too much to where he can't really affect the game anymore. And then his team gets eliminated, and that's that. So those two guys have that not going for them. And Minnesota has that not going
for
them.
Do the Suns go really small ball on this team ever?
No.
You don't think?
No. They will when they're desperate, but that's it.
Okay.
And so Suns fans better hope they never see it, basically.
I'm just curious if you throw it in for like a 5 minute spurt just to like break things up if it gets ugly, or just to try it and see what happens.
If we see it for more than 3 total minutes before like emergency, like a 3 minute stretch or more before it's break glass emergency time, I'll be shocked.
I just like messing with people to make them think too much, and then you get in a rhythm. More than it's functional, to be clear. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
Other side of the coin for Minnesota, Anthony Edwards has been amazing in his 2 playoff series career. Hasn't seen past the first round yet, but he's averaging 28 a game right now. His true shooting percentage is like 60. I looked up 21 or younger, 25 points or more, 10 games or more. LeBron, Luka, him.
How old is he now? Is he 20?
He's 22.
He's 22 now. Okay.
Is this his moment? Is this when he can usurp Devin Booker, who, by the way, Book is 11-1 in him. 11-1 against him in the regular season.
I tried
to ask Book about, and I hope you knew that. You edited the story.
Well, I knew that when I read that. I was like, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I tried to ask Book about Ant today, and he's like, it's Suns versus Timberwolves. Not really focused on that. So
there's no fun.
That there's no extra stuff.
There was some Team USA. Who's going to be the starting shooting guard stuff from some national podcaster.
Now. Yeah, we'll see. I've got Wolves in six just because of the consistency thing. If I had a decent amount of faith in the Suns being consistent, then this would be a Suns in six pick. I wouldn't even go to seven. I'd go six because I think everything is trending in their direction with this matchup, just with the way everything is balancing together. The fact that you're getting Cat like a week off his return basically is a big part of this as well. The fact that it seems like Minnesota's role players, when they're set up for success like the way they were in these three games, are not stepping up to the plate. Nas not having a good game in any of these three games is concerning for them as well. But it just comes back to consistency and continuity. I haven't seen enough of it. Guess what? We might see the opposite of 22, where you pop on the podcast game three after New Orleans and you're like, man, I just like, who is this? Who are these guys? And the opposite of that might happen, where we're game three in Phoenix, we're sitting on the court doing our podcast, we're like, who are these guys? We don't even notice them. Like, they're a completely different team in a good way.
Yeah.
There's a good chance of that happening. I'm not sitting here ruling it out. I am ready to be wrong. I was wrong before with series predictions. I'm going to be wrong again at some point. So we'll see. But for now, I'm leaning Minnesota. The one thing I'll say before we get off this is that I think game one is going to be extremely telling, because the Suns should be very confident.
Mm-hmm.
They should feel like they have this team's number. Minnesota feels like Phoenix has their number. And this is a huge moment for Minnesota, by the way. They haven't been out of the first round since KG. It's been a long time since they've seen playoff success. And there's a lot of pressure on Kat. Maybe there's pressure on Ant, not as much maybe. There's a lot of pressure on Gobert. The narratives around those two around the playoffs, we just talked about them. So this is a huge moment for them, and that game on Saturday is going to be rowdy. And how Minnesota handles that environment, or how that environment picks them up, and how the Suns respond to that environment is big, because, look, man, I've seen what that can do for the opposing team. Like, when the Suns were on that 21 run and they were in Denver and it was rowdy, and they shut that crowd up so many times over those two games, like, they loved it. They loved it. And is this team going to respond that way to that kind of environment? I don't know yet. I don't know.
I'm going to say I'm going into this playoff series resetting clean slate, but the moment there's a 5-minute period where the Suns make every mistake imaginable and look like the regular season team, I'm going to be like, nope. And they could still win this series against that team and me still not believe in them. But
I have an affinity / weakness towards kind of trying, not trying, but just being a basketball purist with the way I think about these kinds of things. And what I believe is, if you have, let's say it's the start of the fourth quarter in game two, Suns are down 1-0 in the series and they are up 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say they're up 11. They're up 11. First two possessions don't really go that well. It's like, they just don't get a great shot, or they get a good shot and it doesn't go in. Minnesota scores like once. Now it's a 9-point game. Hand off with KD, turned over, dunk. 7-point game. Run it down, Book resets, spaces it out. KD's on the weak side corner, kicks it to Grayson for a three. Grayson misses. Minnesota runs off transition and gets to the bucket. And one.
Kind of lazy transition.
4-point game.
Yeah.
Suns go down after a timeout, run another really well-executed play. Someone bobbles the ball. Minnesota goes down, kick out McDaniels three. It's a 1-point game. It's like at that moment, when it goes from 11 to 1, which I've seen happen for this team dozens of times this
year. Yeah, you were really making that up quickly in your head, I was going to say.
It was
say,
easy.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard, unfortunately, for Suns fans. How do they respond at that moment? What I've seen this year has been very bad. It has been very bad to how they respond to that. Do they have the stability to gather themselves when things start spiraling? Their fourth quarter numbers have been better, but they haven't been better in the way that I wanted to see them be better, which is when things are not going well, are you staying with it? Like that Clippers game with Bones Highland and the boys, it was there for 4 minutes, and those guys just couldn't hit shots anymore, and the Suns were not putting them away until like 4 minutes later when they finally did, and there was like 3 minutes left, and they got up 6 or something. How are they going to respond? Because that is going to happen in one of these games, and in that kind of scenario, it's like you should have won game two. Now you're down 2-0. Now you have to win both at home. What happens when that happens again in like the second quarter of game three? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you respond? It's just those kinds of things are what worried me the most and why I'm going with Minnesota in six. The usual rule of pick the team with the best player usually works out pretty well. Suns have the two best players in this series and I'm picking against them. We'll see how that goes for me. It bold play cotton, whatever the line is from Dodgeball. Yeah. I'm psyched. Before we go, we'll talk about Kevin Young, but also, again, I'm going to broadcast it. I should have at the top, but post-game pods, I'm going to talk to the Suns people, the basketball players and the coach. I'm going to go record my little video.
I might go talk to Chris while home games, but
and then I'm going to walk on over to my hotel. I'm going to write my words, and then we're going to podcast.
Okay.
And then when we're in Phoenix, we'll do the same kind of thing. We'll be in the same building, I imagine. You'll go to Minnesota's locker rooms, I imagine, or at least like Chris Finch's availability, and see what they're saying, and we'll be there with that. The written previews are half down right now. By the time you're hearing this, the third one is probably up. It'll be up Thursday morning, I imagine. And then I'll have a part four on Friday. They're traveling to the plane right now. It could change, but they're going to Minnesota on Thursday. They'll be practicing there on Friday. And then they'll be playing Saturday afternoon. I'm psyched about that, by the way. Like a 2:30 tip-off time local. I love that. That's how I want it. Brad was the same way today. He's like, I love that because you just wake up in the games. Like, you don't have to wait around all day. It's like you wake up and you go play some basketball. And then I'll have a game preview. Like, it'll be looked at as a game preview, but it's basically like a post this game, pre this game, what happened, what went wrong, what do they need to change, that kind of thing, which can vary. Like, there was one I wrote after game three of Denver, I was like, yo, this is the best team in the world.
Yeah.
And then you can be after the Denver series where you're like, oh, this. And then after the Clippers series, you're like, is Devin Booker, like, is he the best son of all time? I think he's the best son of all time. Like, it's fun. I'm really looking forward to it. We get an extra day in Minnesota. I love that. We get an extra day coming back, too.
So much stretched out between first three games.
There's some good space in there for the Suns as well to kind of get rest. But from the start of game three on, it's game day off. So yeah. They'll get in there. And if they play a long series, they'll go into the next one, and it'll probably be a lot more of that. Before we get to KY, since we're on the topic of playoffs still, give me your picks right now.
For, like, winning?
Like the bracket in your head. Where are you going? Okay.
Oh, bracket in the head.
I got you, King. Hold on.
Yeah.
All right. 1-8. To be determined.
OKC, though.
In the West. It is going to be the Kings or the Pelicans, who don't have Zion for at least 2 weeks. I'm going OKC in 5.
Yeah.
Whoever they're playing. Nuggets, Lakers. This is kind of fun until you remember that Denver has dominated the Lakers. And
yeah.
It's like, eh.
Yeah. Denver.
Yeah. Denver in 5. We went over Minnesota, Phoenix. Clips, Mavs.
I think that goes 6. And I think Mavs.
I think Mavs in 6 as well. I almost want to say 5 because they have. Maybe quietly, not so quietly, depending on if you've been paying attention, they might be the team playing the best out of anyone right now in terms of their current form. Like how we talked about the Pelicans in 22, like they might be playing the best of anyone. OKC Dallas.
Oh. Ooh.
OKC in 6.
I'll go OKC in 7.
I think that there's a certain type of team that could give Oklahoma City trouble. There's of them. It's not Dallas. It would be the Clippers.
Oh,
it would be the Suns.
Saying, yeah.
It would be like the Nuggets, the Lakers. They avoid all of them.
Yeah.
And by trouble, I mean like give them a really, really tough like coin flip series where I think they would be more the best team there. Denver and for you, Phoenix. For me, Minnesota.
Denver.
Denver as well. Denver, OKC.
Denver.
I have Denver.
How's Jamal Murray doing, by the way?
Six.
Has he been playing well?
Dude, it's the playoffs. He's going to turn into one of the best guards alive.
I am also a believer, but I'm just saying.
Celtics and TBD. And this is where we don't even have like a play-in result
yet. Don't care. Knicks Celtics and TBD. 4. Knicks. Wait, who are their options, actually?
Their options are Philly, which is the one that everyone's kind of circling as like, oh, that would be interesting. Philly and Miami, which is another one. Like, that's kind of interesting.
Who's hurt on the Knicks? Everyone important?
Julius Randle is he got
Knicks in 6.
Jalen Brunson's that dude.
Yeah,
their defense is insane. Josh Hart's been incredible for them. Here's a fun one: Milwaukee, Indiana. Some people, the sexy pick here is Indiana.
I might go Indiana in 7.
The Bucks are preparing to be without Giannis for the start of the playoffs. Dame has been kind of.
This is gonna implode again, like last year. I don't feel good about that team.
I'll go Indiana in 7, but I don't feel great about it. I don't feel great about picking against Milwaukee. The NBA TV series, Cleveland and Orlando.
Cleveland in.
Actually, oh yeah, 2 games on NBA TV.
6. Just more talent. You like Orlando?
Their clutch offense is so bad, though. It's like, how do they win playoff games?
I don't know.
I'll go Cleveland in 7, and it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, it's not a playoff
team.
All
right, Boston, Cleveland, Boston.
Boston, Cleveland, Boston, yep.
Did you pick Milwaukee or India? You
went Indy.
Indy and Knicks. A throwback.
That's where I'm going, Indy. And you should go Bucks.
I picked Indy in 7 still.
I'll go Indy in 6. I don't trust the Knicks if they're
You don't
back.
Trust the Knicks? I trust the Knicks. I'm going with the Knicks. I'm going 1-2-1-2. That's how I went.
Okay.
Boston, New York, Boston.
Boston.
Boston, Denver.
I don't know if the Celtics are good. I think they are, though. I mean that in like an elite good championship And I don't like picking Denver to win again. So I think I'll go Boston.
Controversial statement. Nikola Jokic is my new LeBron James. And what I mean by that is whenever LeBron was peak LeBron, I would never pick against his
That's
team to
true.
Make the finals or win the finals ever. And I'm going to keep doing that with Jokic until I'm proven otherwise.
That's not a good matchup either, but I'll go Celtics because I'm like a team Joe Mazzulla. Everyone, I don't know if this is just me in my head. I don't pay attention to them very much, but he deserves more credit for that situation he inherited, and he's kept it together, and they're very good.
The big swing for me in that series is what does Denver look like if Holiday has Murray in hell?
Yeah.
Because there's a really good chance that he does.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen anyone like really contain Jamal in the playoffs yet, but Holiday
That's
the is
guy.
The guy that can do that. He's the guy that can do it. Denver in six still.
Okay.
They're still just like too much of a well-oiled machine. Like Gordon looks like he's been playing there for 20 years when you watch them. And it's like, bro, you just got here like 2 years ago. What is this?
It's easy to play with that big man.
I was really surprised by that last year, honestly. Him in particular, I was like, it's Kevin Durant, stop. And then he played really well. Kevin Young off to BYU. We're starting to see a little bit more of this, but just like NIL money / assistants kind of going the college route. And Kevin Young, certainly someone who could be an NBA coach still, but that
looks like a good deal.
That 7-year deal is they're really holding them down for now. He got a very good deal from them. Unless we see what I talked about, which is switch flip Suns, I think the coaching staff won't be back. So it was probably the right move to get out now. And he'll do extremely well with that job. I had BYU fans telling me, we run modern offense already. It's like, I'm sure that's very nice. I'm sure. But he'll come in there with modern ideas, take a year or two to get his types of players in there, and then they're going to run roughshod because I complain about college basketball offenses all the time on here. Whenever LeBron and JJ do on their podcast, I adore it because LeBron has to watch college basketball.
When the women's game gets into their offensive sets much quicker,
yeah,
it's like, yeah.
We were talking about it with Brad today, and I joked about it with Brad. I was like, they do these like three dribble handoffs for 12 seconds and nothing happens. Like they probably run the same stuff still that you saw at Florida.
And
like,
then they get to it. Yeah.
Then whatever.
I'll say that's an ominous sign where there's little things percolating, but we're fine. We'll talk about it later. The Suns are in the playoffs. It's all good for now.
Got a good matchup. There are signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That you good?
Yeah.
Ready for is Minneapolis nice this time of year?
So that's the thing is I've been told by my Midwest cohorts, namely Lauren Koval, that just check the weather every day because it could just change on a dime. It's looking like 50, 30, high, low. So like I'll take that. I just don't want like sludgy rain kind of stuff. Mm-mm. But I'm close to the arena either way. I walked to, it was like downpour weather in Milwaukee for game 2 of the finals or game 4 of the finals.
You just show up a soggy boy to
game
the...
2 and I just like my hoodie was like soaked and I just left it on like a chair to dry for like 4 hours.
Fix this during the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of worked out. That was the series where I forgot my glasses at home. So I was like, fuzz like this watching the games. And it was tough. But I made it work. Right. I'll remember my glasses this time. But yeah, I'm stoked. I'm probably going to go see a bowl game right down the street again.
You'll have days off. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be cool. All right, everyone. We will be back on Saturday, late afternoon, evening. I guess local time, we'll be podcasting by like 4:30, 5. Yeah. So by dinner time, or if you're like me and you like listen to a podcast before sleep, we'll be there with you. I'm excited. I'm stoked. I hope you guys are too. And we'll talk to you then. Bye.
See ya.